This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is May 16th, 2018. Wow, already. Amazing. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. This week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call our text. Well, you can't call or text us today because we're going to have a guest on the phone, so we're going to pass on that one. Anyway, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or if you're listening to this on podcast, you can also send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Okay, Ron's Rant of the Week is going to start out with, it's actually going to come from a special guest who I will introduce shortly. And I always ask if I have a special guest coming on, if they have a particular pet peeve or a rant or something they want to talk about. I like to throw them in there. And so anyway, my special guest has a pet peeve of cyclists that don't use hand signals. I'm with you. I'm with you all the way on that. And also cyclists riding on sidewalks. Oh, don't even get me started. I am certainly an anti-cycling on sidewalk guy. One of my things that I like to put out is if you are going to ride your bicycle on the sidewalk because somehow, some way it is legal in your town, which is not everywhere, then you must ride at pedestrian speed. Makes sense. Anyway, we could talk about that in a little bit when I put Jenna on, and we'll get a little bit more into that. So she also is not real happy with the half-done bike lanes all over the country, which we have a lot of. And sharrows, in her opinion, are better than bike lanes in the sense of the afterthought mentality. All right, so we'll get back to Jenna here in just a minute. On a positive side, it's Bike to Work Week. Yes, it is. This is National Bike to Work Week, and Friday is National Bike to Work Day. Be sure to check that out in your area. You're going to find that most states are participating in this, and there are a lot of towns also that are participating in this. So it's a big nationally organized event. It's through the bikeleague.org, and you should check that out because this is the time to bike to work. This is it. It breaks you into this whole idea, and then before you know it, you'll be just dyed-in-the-wool commuter, and life will be better, and our planet will be better too. The maintenance minute, last check on your bike before heading off to work this week. Make sure your bike is ready to go so you can get there. That's always a good thing too. I'm going to move right on to our guest, and our guest is Jenna Greaser from Barkhamsted, Connecticut, and also Canada. We had a little bit of travel here that goes on. Anyway, Jenna is a professional mountain bike racer. And Jenna, are you there?
I am, Ron.
All right. Very good, Jenna. Nice to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So I was introduced to you through our friend Scott, who has been on the show in the past, and he said you were a colorful character, and I should have you on the show.
yes, indeed. I guess that's a good way to put it.
All right. So there's something here I just want to bring out before I ask you the traditional questions here, but I want to bring out, and in part of your introduction here, that you are the U.S. National Fat Bike National Champion as of February 10th, 2018. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's like, wow, congratulations. You're like a big deal.
Yeah, kind of. It wasn't a huge turnout, unfortunately, for the Nationals. I think on that same day there was a race in Traverse City, Michigan, about an hour and a half northwest, about 600 people at it. So,
wow.
A little bit of scheduling issues there, obviously. It'd be great to have more women come, but I think the main reason with the low numbers for the professionals, both on the male and female side, you know, the amateurs had pretty good size fields, is for most of us, fat biking is used for training, right? So
right.
We all have allotted budgets. We all have our main seasons, whether it's cyclocross, road, or mountain bike. And, you know, we can only travel so far. So the gals I know who do ride fat bikes out west, you know, like Colorado or whatever, for example, aren't going to make a big trip and fly to Michigan. And same thing with the East Coast, right? So in the middle of the winter, travel is an issue big time, right? And it definitely adds to the stress factor of that. But that's just kind of on a side note there.
Sure. So why do you think they have the Fat Bike Nationals in the winter? That seems kind of like an odd time, doesn't it?
Well, not for fat biking. I mean, they do have the on beach stuff, right? So they do have the national championship for that. I'm not even sure if it's actually a national championship, so don't quote me on that. I just know it's like they have the beach, they call it like the beach nationals or something. But I mean, fat biking in the winter has blown up exponentially in the last couple years. USA Cycling started doing the actual winter fat bike nationals in 2014 and has maintained that ever since, with local races growing huge, like the Birkebeinder, famous for cross-country skiing with several thousand participants, has started now a fat bike Birkie, right? So there we'll be doing that next year. But, you know, several hundred people, like I said, even at that Traverse City one, are showing up to these fat bike races all over the country.
All right. Well, that's great. So I'm going to back up just for a second because I ask every guest that comes on my show what your very first experience is that you can remember with being with a bicycle. And if you could just share that with us, please.
Yeah. I definitely remember via photos quite a bit when I was little. But one of the main ones was like learning how to ride a bike without pedals. Obviously, it was a big standout in my mind, and I also remember it kind of on skis when I was a younger tyke. But for biking, it was in the backyard, and my dad put me on some old dumpster bike, I don't even know what it was, and just kind of set me off and kind of ran after me, you know, just riding down the hill, and I have a couple photos of me just smiling away, super stoked, not scared, right?
Right.
But I mainly got into the first, like, real memories of biking were, you know, in grade school. And in the summers, I would go to downhill ski, dryland training camps. And it was a great way for cross training. Like, all these ski camps had mountain biking as some of our cross training and stuff. And that was what really started to hook me into the biking scene, so to speak,
yeah.
when I was younger. Yeah.
So. There's a nice crossover. So those photos that you sent over to me, are those you?
Yeah, yep.
Oh, they are. Oh man,
yeah.
Fran, you gotta check the photos. I forwarded them over to you. Well, I'm sure you're still adorable, but you're an adorable kid. Really cute pictures. I like the one with your tongue sticking out. That's particularly nice.
Yeah, that's become an iconic mark through actually my racing as a 32-year-old now as well. So it's kind of funny that I've definitely carried it through and made some funny collages in the past on my Instagram feeds and other places with mashups of, like, that photo, a couple of photos, and, like, current day, pretty much, like, identical shots.
And I'm also looking here, and it appears that your parents are in some of these photos, and because I see maybe your mom with a Broncoli helmet on, which is like tells me the date there, because I had one of those many, many years ago because we used to race with those, which is a little scary because they really don't work.
I know, right?
They really don't work. But you know what? We wore them because they were legal at the time, so that's what we did. And I see there's also one here. Is that your dad with you in a baby seat in the back of the bike?
That's his 1981 Bianchi special right there.
There you go. All right. Yeah. And I love the photo too of him behind you as you're you know, learning on your bike too. That's great.
Yeah,
those are awesome photos.
That's definitely one of the main memories of mine that, like, I actually remember, not just via photos. And then, like I said, in summer I would be in the expert boys group, only boys. I was the only girl riding in the expert boys group in the summer camp for mountain biking. So.
Yeah. So you're home for a visit right now in Barkhamsted?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But normally you're in British Columbia, right?
Correct. Well, for the last year and a half, so I met my boyfriend racing. I was doing the whole pro cross-country mountain bike tour in the United States in 2016, kind of after my professional cyclocross debut, and that's how I really connected with Scott Livingston there and got us sponsored with Horse Bikes and, you know, carry that on through with my mountain biking now. And speaking of which, used those a lot in this year's Fat Bike Nationals. There was tons of running, and if I didn't have those toe spikes, I would have been on my bum a lot.
No, he's got a great product there. Those horse spikes are wonderful. They, you know, a lot of people are using them now. It seems like more and more of the pros are racing with those spikes. And I know he's shipping them all over the world now, which is really cool. That's a totally cool.
Awesome.
And it's, you know, it's something right here out of East Hartford, Connecticut, which is kind of cool. So,
Very good.
And of course he's such an enthusiastic guy. He's great.
Indeed.
Yeah. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I'm in Canada because I met my boyfriend Dylan Bailey, racing. I was doing the whole pro tour in the States, and I was told by, a couple, people that I raced with that, hey, you should go up north of the border into Canada and race some of the closer Canada Cup event for, at that point I was chasing the UCI points, right? International points and rankings.
Sure.
And so I went across the border north of Toronto and did like a week. There was a back-to-back week of really fun, technical, good races up there. And that's how we met. And it became, well, okay, how are we going to do this? Because he lives in Ontario at the time. And it was like, well, all right, one of us is going to, you know, either come to the U.S. or Canada, and it just made more sense. I wanted to move back west, although, you know, home base has always been the East Coast. I lived out in Ketchum, Sun Valley, Idaho for 2 years, and mm-hmm. It was, you know, I actually won Marathon Mountain Bike National Championships out there as an amateur. I was amateur, like Cat 1, you know, 19 to 29 age group,
right.
I was out there. And you know, that was... I just loved it out there, and I wanted to move back, so I met Dylan, and we were like, okay, and he sold his home in Ontario, and now we're living in the Rockies, you know, in Fernie, British Columbia, so.
Wow. Well, you know, no offense to those of us here in the United States, but they're much nicer up there. That's my feeling, anyway. You know,
yeah,
Fran
yeah,
actually
really...
spent a number of years up in Canada and also maintains a Canadian citizenship up there, too, so... because she was practicing natural medicine up in Canada for a while. So,
good on you, Fran.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's a fellow Canadian, I guess. Are you a Canadian yet, or are you hanging out?
The process is way more involved than people. Everyone's like, you have your citizenship yet? I'm like, it takes like 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, and it takes like 3 after your permanent residency.
Right.
So I'm just in, so I've got the open work permit. That was number one. And number two is we, you know, got me through with the permanent residency I'll have as of October. And then at that point,
she has to be a permanent. I was very fortunate in that I was the only person who wanted to be a naturopathic physician in St. John's, Newfoundland. And when they advertised it to the rest of Canada, nobody else wanted the job. So
awesome.
I walked in as a permanent resident. So my 3 years started when I moved to Canada. So that was great. So I 3 years after that, I was able to apply for citizenship. So Jenna, her 3 years will start counting in October. So 3 years October,
right,
she will be able to apply for citizenship.
Right. And is that the plan? You're planning on staying there?
You betcha. Yep, that's definitely the plan. I've gone through the process. But it'll be cool because I can maintain dual, and so I can compete in, you know, the national championships in Canada and in the U.S.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You can compete either under either? Oh, well,
right.
That's interesting. Yes. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So even though I'm living there, like, I have a BC cycling license, but I'm still, like, I just went and raced the Marathon Mountain Bike National Championships in Arkansas. Unfortunately, had my first and hopefully only DNF due to a flat. But there was 80 DNFs. It was kind of a luck of the draw type of event, which was really, really unfortunate. But that aside, so I'm under U.S. nationality, right? So I can compete in all the USA Cycling events and still internationally covered under USA Cycling or BC Cycling, not under USA Cycling anymore because I've been a resident in Canada for more than living there for more than 6 months. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The backsides of the cycling, you know, the licenses and all that stuff. It's been a learning process and other things to do with me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not just racing fat bikes and you're racing other versions of mountain bikes too, right?
Yes. Yep. That's my main focus is mountain biking. So fat biking was kind of an afterthought, to be honest. I was racing cyclocross, UCI and World Cup for Van Dessel. Bicycles here. And so
you must know Cassie then, right?
Yes, of course. We just rode at Waldo the other day. Her and I are like really great friends, and it's funny because I just made a post after our ride of like, you know, we both wish we could be neighbors.
Right.
It's just like we jive really well, and she was one of the first people, actually one of the first gals I ever really met and got along with. Pretty hard not to get along with her, but
yeah, she's very nice.
Yeah, so it was just awesome, to come back and reconnect. And, you know, Max is there. Her husband there is the Thule rep. And my Thule bag actually got ripped open by TSA on my way here to arrive in Bradley. And they just threw it out on the conveyor belt, completely wide open, zipper broken.
No.
Not even inside the bag. Oh, yeah, and Jeremy Powers is there. And he's looking at me and looks at the bike bag. He's like, good luck with that project.
Oh my God.
So I sent it to Michael right away, Thule, and they're like, we got you covered. So, went down and rode with her and kind of looping. But anyway, the Van Dessel, Edwin, owner of Van Dessel, was like, well, heck, I want to, like, keep you aboard my rigs and representing. And, I approached him about fat biking, because he doesn't have a full suspension line yet. Kind of in the works here.
Mm-hmm.
Won't talk any more about it just because I don't know full details. But his Prima Ballerino fat bike have been out kind of since the beginning of fat biking life. And, I approached him. I was like, look, hey, like, I'll race fat bikes for you. Like, let's get me on a fat bike and I'll do big races in Canada and in the States kind of in the winter. And, we, unlike here in the Northeast, once it's winter, it's winter. So once you get snow, you get snow. Fernie had 11 meters of snow this winter. To put it in perspective, they're still just drying out, you know, on the high alpine from the winter. And their bike parks don't open until the middle of June. And, you know, so it's a little bit different climate out there. So it's just, you get, you know, you have, we have the machines, like we have all the grooming, like people are,
everybody's on that cross-country skiing is such a great overlap to cycling too.
Yep, it is. I
think it's the best winter training you can do for cycling. I've found myself coming off of, if we get an occasional year where we actually have good conditions for cross-country skiing, I learned how to skate ski a number of years ago, and that just opened my world of fitness because it's really, really hard and really, really fast, and, you know, it's exciting, and boy, when I got back on my bike in the spring, I was like a monster. It was cool.
Yeah, it's been for me as well. So Dylan, his brother, Eric Bailey, is actually a former World Cup Nordic athlete and coach, and he actually coaches us. He started his own business, Catalyst Coaching and Sport Lab. It's based out of Thunder Bay, but he does, we're not in Thunder Bay, so he is coaching us via Training Peaks and Skype and all his other ways of doing things. We don't use the lab and the equipment. Kind of thing, you know, that's a perk if you live there, but he does coach clients all over, starting now North America and stuff. But anyway, so having that as a background, I really never really had like gotten into Nordic seriously. My parents were both biathletes. They lived in Minnesota, and so they did, you know, tons of Nordic skiing because the same thing, it's just cold and snowy and pretty tame out there as far as terrain goes. We're great for Nordic, but same in British Columbia, the Nordic Trail Networks are awesome, and it's been really great to offset those 4 to 5 hour saddle time indoors, you know, more than once a week if you don't have to kind of supplement, you know, training volume for cardio and fitness building and stuff, being out on the Nordic trails in addition to the stop biking, right? So it's definitely awesome being there in the winter, and I love winter. You know, I said grew up a downhill ski racer, and so for me, it's really, you know, I need, like, time away from the trails in the summer and the heat. Like, I really thrive with kind of having the opposites, and for the training aspect, again, it keeps you kind of fresh and motivated. Like, I don't think I could ever, everyone's like, why don't you live somewhere where you could bike all year round? Like, you know, and I'm like, well, because I don't really want to. Like, I'm really excited to race when race season comes, because I have been in the snow for 3 months, or that kind of thing, right?
So right.
I thrive on that. Yeah.
Right. Oh, no, you need a break. You know, we have a friend who he was a kinesiology major here at UConn, and he ended up going out to San Diego, and he's a personal trainer. He's a very athletic guy. And he said that the when he was living in San Diego, he said the burnout rate of athletes was really, really high. Because the weather's always perfect. So people are out all the time, and they end up pushing themselves too hard and never taking a break from what they're from their discipline and what they're doing. And they either get injured or they burn out because of it. Because you got to mix it up a little.
Yep, you do. And I've learned that kind of the hard way as well. As I had Division I running scholarship to University of Vermont. And like I said, I went to ski academy as a kid. So I've been that very, like, focused athlete forever, but the main reason I actually declined, like, my running scholarship at the end of high school there was I was like, you know what, I don't want to run 4 seasons a year. I'm like, I'm gonna be at University of Vermont, and I can't go skiing in the winter when it's, like, you know, at Jiminy Peak and all these northern Vermont mountains. I was like, forget it. You know, I need.
Yeah, because
need
so it's, were you in Burlington? Did you go to Burlington then?
I didn't go to. I actually went to University of Connecticut.
Oh, you did?
That in, yeah,
that's why you had a UConn jersey in one of those pictures. Okay.
Yeah, you.
All right.
Yeah, I was at Smith College actually for my first semester, and then I took a year and a half off from college altogether. The whole, you know, traditional, like, find myself, figure it all out, and I came back and stayed close to home and went to University of Connecticut, and that's kind of how I got into the cycling as well. There was that was like really when I actually started competing, and it was after I had, you know, we were talking about earlier, Lyme. I got Lyme disease in 2008, just when I got into the UConn cycling program.
Oh, boy. Welcome to our area. Yeah.
Yeah, that knocked me out, and then do that, and then February, just after I'd, like, you know, all that, I was all excited for road season. I was like, I'm going to be into the road biking, and I was actually working at Benidorm Bikes in the summers, so that was helping me with equipment and other connections and things, and I blew out my ACL, MCL, meniscus in a skier cross race in February.
Oh, my God.
I was like, I'm never going to get this, like, cycling thing underway, but I was super determined, and my knee doctor is Dr. Nissen at Elite Sports Medicine in Farmington, and he replaced my ACL with a patella tendon for the reason that he knew I was going to be, as soon as I was basically off crutches, I was going to be back on that bike, and he knew it, but he's like, just don't tell me until...
Yeah, you know, he has you labeled as one of those, you know?
Exactly, yep, and that's exactly what I did. I was at Benidorm working, I was on one crutch in August, and I was back to school at UConn in, at the start of September there, I was racing my SX Trail downhill bike.
Month.
So it was like one of those things that cycling really helped me get through it all, right? Because I had come from this ski racing and running background, and I no longer could really, like, do that, but I needed the athletic, like, you know, addiction part of my life.
Right.
So it's like,
well,
the bike is the best way to get at this, and it helped me get back to fitness and everything. So, yeah.
You do know what they call old runners, right?
No. What do you call them?
Cyclists. They all end up on a bike one way or another because it's like, you know, eventually you get injured or you get to a point where, you know, you're, it seems like all my old running friends have, they're all on bicycles now. It's either they're on them part time because they use it for cross training or they're on them all the time because they just can't run any longer. So it's kind of a funny thing. It sucks us all in is what it does. Some of us find out earlier and just kind of stay with it for a long time. So you're familiar with the hills around Yukon then, I guess, huh?
Yeah, familiar with the hills around Yukon. And then my folks actually live right on the Tokaneke loop on 181 Tokaneke Road Race. So,
sure.
So that's where I, you know, started all my riding days. So,
right.
So the hills out in BC, you know, are 10 times as much out there than here. But I had at least like this nice good background to all these long sustained climbs, right?
Hey, we used to have a state road race that went around the Barkhamsted Reservoir many years ago. That was one of the years they had that there, and I'll tell you, that was there's some solid climbs. There's definitely some solid climbs that'll keep you guessing for sure. So So if that's your backyard, so your parents live here now, but I heard Minnesota, and so what brought them to Connecticut?
So my mom, they were out there still early 20s, and my dad's actually from Pennsylvania, but they met at the University of Minnesota, and he was playing football for them, and my mom was actually a professional dancer, and she used to travel all over the world, like to Portugal and whatnot, performing, and based out of Minnesota there. Yeah, so she got a job offer at radio TV. She had gone into public advertising and communications, and so she got this awesome job offer in her early 20s to come in Connecticut, and they were either going to go live in at Copper Mountain, where they could could have bought a condo for a 16th of what it costs now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or come to Connecticut and start a career and stuff here. So that's exactly what they did. They found an old farm property up here. It was built in the 1700s. And then my mom shortly after started working for G Fox when it came about. But she's been in the she's run her own business. She started her own business over 35 years ago. Not 30. Sorry. That's all. Yep. 35 years ago. She's almost 70. Based out of Hartford, and she actually does advertising and public communication as well.
Very nice.
Actually, the media gal for CCAP. And that whole connection.
Oh, is she really? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because I see here that in the past you were a volunteer with CCAP.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. David and Hoyle and Karen Franzen and Aiden Charles, that gang.
Yeah. Yep.
I've been connected with them since their initiate, really since the beginning. And that's how the connection happened with my mom working and being their PR. So she helps with any of their, like, you know, anytime they've gotten on radio or TV and things like that, she's been the backbone to that and doing their, you know, everything that goes out in the paper and stuff like that for them. And at the Rentschler Field, and they do their races and other events, the Breakaway Benefit, she's got a big piece to help them out with that too.
Right. So, very good. Yeah. All right. So you got connected all the way. We've actually had them on the air here too, because you know that I love what CCAP is doing. I don't have to think it because it's actually true. It's one of the fastest growing and best youth cycling programs in the country right now.
And, yes, it is.
And you know, we're bringing kids back into cycling. I actually had someone on who rides with them for them. He's 14 years old, and Kevin Mullaly. I don't know if you know Kevin or not.
Yes, I do. Yep.
The whole Mullaly family. We had Laura and Kevin on a few weeks back, and we chatted a lot about that. And Kevin has since contacted me because I wanted him to get one of his young friends who's also racing. I'm just going to have a kid show, and I'm going to put them both on the air, and we're going to have some fun with it. So.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I think that's a cool thing. So that's great. So you give back to your sport. We like that. That's a good thing. It was one of my rants one week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nowadays, as a professional athlete, so here's a little, like, you know, thing for you. It's no longer your results. It's no longer your fast. It's pulled up on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what are you doing? How are you connecting to everything? You know, as an ambassador for multiple companies now, and now being an ambassador
Fran is
for
applauding over here.
What's that?
Fran is applauding over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's been a long time coming, and it's unfortunate, I think, within the industry. It didn't happen 10 years ago when they just started giving free product to athletes everywhere. Just like, you're fast, here, take our stuff. Like,
yeah.
It'll somehow get back to us. And unfortunately, it is what has, in my opinion, and I think through others as well, kind of like had the industry have its problems, right, from that just alone. It's like, okay, well, what, like, how are you going to be able to give back to this company or connect and relate? You know, and that's kind of why Dylan and I started our own team last year, because we're like, well, we want to connect directly to products and sponsors and organizations that we are motivated to support and give back and be a part of and connect on a deeper level and be able to like expose this within our community without being like kind of whatever, you know, lying about the product that it's good. Like, no,
right,
we really love this stuff because we chose it and we've done all of the work to build the relationships with that company and keep it sustaining, right? So we're in our second year with the sponsors that we did bring on last year and some new ones this year. And so it's kind of a building process for us. But, you know, that's the big thing. And it's been one of my difficulties in a sense of I have jumped all over North America as far as where I've lived. So it is sometimes hard to stay as connected to community that way, but I've always found a way, no matter what.
Yeah.
Whether it's I've only lived somewhere for 3 months or a year, to make that number one priority with what I'm doing. And you'll see that's how, you know, a lot of these guys and gals at the professional level, you got to put that work into it. It's, social media is insane these days. It's like a second time job for all of us. But in the same regard, it's like, yes, that's important. And some sponsors really want that stuff. But what they really, really want is how are you connecting? And now a lot of companies, for instance, for me, ESI Grip, The Ritual, top of my head, a sock guy, they have provided, Crank Brothers as well, they have provided me as an ambassador with discount codes to provide. Some of them are fine with it, like blast it out on the internet every time you make a post, if it's like, you know, 20% off thing. Others are like, hey, yeah, promote, give it out when you're doing a clinic, give it out when you're teaching a spin class at the gym, give it out when you give a private lesson, like that kind of thing. And so they can track and relate back to the athlete. And Vestpak, which is another one of mine, they actually give me, it's a 10% commission, but it's a 10% commission. So it gives me a little bit of motivation to like, you know, kind of keep putting posts out there. So the social media posts, no longer just like, hey, look at my stuff in a picture. It's like, here's a little bit more to give you an incentive to read a little bit further down in the post or whatever it is. Right?
It's an important component to it. And if we have any young aspiring racers that are out there that are listening to this and they want to know how it all works, nothing comes to you easy. Just like your training, you have to work for it. And if you do have the opportunity to get a sponsor, you have to put a lot of effort into that. You have to really, you know, get out there and talk up the sponsor. We have a local person, professional bike racer, road racer here, Amber Pierce. I think you must know Amber, right?
I do know Amber. Yeah, we kind of crossed paths at a time, but like don't know her well enough. But yes, I do. I am connected on social media with her and do keep track on that with her. So yeah,
she's amazing. She really gives back a lot, and she's really good at, you know, that whole promotion end of it. And I would think that anyone who sponsors someone like that or like yourself would be very happy with the results that come back from it. But yeah, it's things that people don't understand. You know, you think that if you're going to be this, you know, super athlete, that you just have to go out and train and then show up to the races and do your thing. There's so much more to it.
Yep. And you gotta work hard, like I said, for this, for all these things to come together. And, you know, I have a lot of times people like, oh, you're so lucky you get that. And I'm like, I had to do everything to do it, like, you know, and to make it happen and keep it coming and sustain. It's not just like, again, once you get product, it's not like, oh, yay. Like, nope. Like, you got to keep that going and find ways to, you know, keep connecting with, again, within the community and reaching out in the broader social media world with that. So, yeah.
Right. Well, I think it's great. I think it's awesome. And what's nice is that, you know, there's a little bit more recognition that's coming out of the bicycle industry itself for this sort of thing and the benefits of it. And, you know, I mean, I've been in the bike industry my whole life, and I can tell you that it still has a lot of growing pains. And, you know, this is, if you compare it to how it's being done over in Europe, it's just an entirely different game. So, you know, they understand how it works over there. So it's different world. But you know what? If you can get out and you can do what you're doing and have fun with it, that's great. So I heard you mention something about downhill bike, mountain bike. Do you do that too?
So I dabbled into it when I was there at UConn, just because when I was working at Benidorm, you know, with having employee pricing on bikes, I was like, I'm gonna get an SX Trail, a specialized SX Trail, so, you know, that has 140 millimeter bike, and for me that was like, that's a big bike, this is a downhill bike. And I did, it was a downhill bike, that's what I used. Downhill bike. And so, because when you go to these collegiate weekends, you have short track, cross country, Super D or downhill, and a dual slalom, right? So they'd have Saturday with the XC events and Sunday with the downhill events. It's like, well, if I'm going with the team to these events, I might as well just do all four.
Sure.
Why would
sure.
I just do one? And so I just kind of used it as a way to get into more technical training and stuff. And that kind of fell by the way. Obviously, I sold that bike when I was just like, I'm just going to race cross-country mountain biking and cyclocross, because I really, you can't, when you're just getting into it and trying to go pro, you can't be doing five disciplines. You can't be riding the road. You can't be riding the cyclocross.
You can't you got to focus.
Like, it's like, okay, I got to dial in. Mm. The money goes to, because again, I'm putting everything out from my own pocket of everything that I've earned, and you're just like, this is what I'm going to do. So that's a good pointer for anybody who is involved. And as much as you want to do all the disciplines, if you really like all of it, you got to kind of try and narrow it down when you're first starting out. And so that kind of, like, you know, that part of the bike life went out of my life for a little while. And now being with Rocky Mountain, I just got an altitude. So it's 150, 160, and we'll be doing our first enduro, the North American Enduro Cup in Kellogg, Idaho, in June. So I'm definitely getting back into that. I got sponsored by 661 this year, so I have full face. I got clipless shoes. I got the armor. So
you know, you got to be careful. You can get really seriously broken doing that.
I know. But I mean, we're really, the enduro is basically, some enduros are basically a downhill in itself, exactly that.
Yes.
But our idea is to kind of just stay more on the tamer side of it, I'm not going to be doing like 20-foot drops and big, like that's never, I'm an endurance athlete, it's what I thrive on, but everyone's like, you got to do the enduro, like your descending and your technical skills are so strong. I actually just, when I did the Pisgah stage race this year, beginning of April, I won the GC, but I also won the enduro overall, which did a time segment every day, which was, you know, kind of to me an eye opener of like, yeah, I really like, you know, and there was girls there that just were there for the enduro, and I was there for the overall, you know, the actual cross country races every day. And it was like, okay, maybe I really, I do have a very strong scale of descending coming from my, you know, I've been downhill ski racing since I could walk. And so I really don't have, my fear factor is pretty low when it comes to speed. I've gone 72 miles an hour in downhill races on skis and other things. And so for us at the enduro, it's more like, okay, we're going to like stick to the tamer side of it, so to speak. And, just go have fun with it. People like you have the fitness and the technical handling skills, so.
Yeah. So as a woman, as a professional mountain bike racer, what do you say to a young girl who is interested in getting involved in this?
I'd say go for it. Don't hold back. Don't let anybody, whether it's the influence from the female side of things. I think for me, it's definitely the influence on the female side of life that was more, detrimental than anything with guys, right?
I mean,
for me, I grew up pretty tomboyish. Hate that label, but it's what we call it, right?
I'm a farm girl.
I was rowdy. I wanted to be in the mud and the dirt and, didn't wear makeup. My eyebrows were bushy. I didn't care. That was what I thrived on. And
you mean people pluck their eyebrows? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, you resemble most of the women that I know. So it's it seems like we hang around with a lot of people that are like-minded. Wouldn't you say, Fran?
Yeah, well, I was born blonde, so, I shave if I feel like it.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I'm dark Welsh and German hair, so it was a little different for me.
Right. And if I had that situation, I might shave more. It's true.
Yeah.
But I think I've definitely grown into my own skin and a balance with that of being my own girly enough and my own rough and tough enough girl, if that makes any sense. And I think it is hard too. I see a lot of pros, a lot of these professional females from road to mountain falling into the trap of gotta put on makeup every time I'm taking a selfie, gotta put on makeup every time I'm out riding, gotta have my hair perfect every time I'm doing a little video thing, gotta look good. And it's just I've tried to not combat that, but I'm, whatever. I'm just saying, this is it. I'm out mountain biking. This is what I'm look like. I haven't didn't do anything different. This is what I'm doing, right? So you do see it, unfortunately, people trying to fit into the perfect image of cycling and life, and it's not true. And so for me, that's just a hard part too. But it is what it is, and I just have to keep doing my thing.
And I look at it it's a perception thing too, because we have this feeling, this image of how we have to see people, and I look at someone who's really fit, and I think they look great, and I don't care if their hair's out of place, or male or female, it doesn't matter to me at all. And I just look, and I take a look at a really fit body and someone who's been really responsible with their body and taking care of themselves, and I think that looks better.
Yeah.
So, and that's my perception. And, it's not everyone's perception, and unfortunately it's not the perception of magazine covers, but who cares? That to me isn't as important. So I think what you're doing is great. So here you go. You got this little girl and she's interested in doing what you're doing. She gets all excited because she just met you and you're obviously just a ball of fire and energy. And so you've got her all excited. Now you've got her parents standing there and they're looking at you and maybe they're giving you the stink eye because they're going, oh my God, what are you talking my little girl into? How do you explain to parents that this is a way to go, that it's not, an organized, soccer or field hockey or volleyball or basketball or whatever it is, what we'll call it, the conventional, I hate that word, sport. Because, cycling's not conventional. I mean, it's not.
No, it's
so,
not.
So how do you explain that to the parents?
Yeah, I think, with that being said, the way I would really approach that is this is a wonderful opportunity for your daughter to really find her own self, to be a to grow up, to kind of to be a strong female, like a strong, you know, not being really kind of having to go always with the flow of life, which, you know, sometimes isn't the best way with things. I mean, I grew up with team sports as well, but I also had a balance of individual sports too, right? Like from the downhill ski racing and getting into cycling and running and that kind of thing. You know, just like with those individual sports, there's always a team behind it. Dylan and I, you know, we are a team. Like there's only two of us, but we have all of our, again, our sponsors and all those people who are also a bigger part of that team. But going back to the original question, on that, you know, it's a great way for young girls to really like just get out there and be brave and be courageous and keep the momentum going with that, you know, women have equal opportunity as men in this time and age that we're in. And, you know, it's a really good way for girls to really just get out there and have fun in a way that isn't, again, like it doesn't have a cap on it, right? Like it's just an open world for them. not every parent maybe wants to hear that, but that's how I would express it.
Right. So what does it take to be a professional mountain bike racer other than being able to just ride your bike really fast?
Well, you know, like you said, a lot there on the self-discipline aspect of the training piece, right? Like I actually didn't have a coach until Dylan's brother there, really, like anything consistent. I had kind of had some help from people like before, but it takes a lot of like self-discipline and motivation, and you got to be organized, and you got to have some type A in you slightly if you are going to attack it yourself. I'm not saying type B people cannot be bike racers, they're professionals. That's where having a coach or mentor, right? You need to have the right kind of and find that. And luckily for me, like I have like too much motivation that almost needs to be reeled in sometimes. So that's almost where Eric, my coach, helps me, right? He helps with, this is when you have to take time off. He's really my sports psychologist. You know, I have, I'm type A. So I'm always thinking, I'm always on the go. And I have a lot of anxiety sometimes around that piece of it. And having cycling and having that the discipline side brought in from the coach of, okay, here's like kind of how you need to help get yourself into more of a regimented training focus has been really helpful. But you need to have some self-discipline, but you also need to be willing to be coached. You have to be willing to let other people help you. And for me, that was harder. I'm an only child, and both my parents, hardworking parents. My dad's 73 and he still works full time construction, and you know, they work really hard. And he's actually a professor at University of Connecticut. He taught sports psychology there back in the day. But
oh, really?
Wow. So okay. It's, you know, being able to, for me, have somebody else. You know, I was just so independent. For me, the hardest thing about becoming a professional cyclist is having other people tell you what to do. You know, I'm like, I know what to do. Like, I got this. Don't worry, I got this. I totally can do it all on my own. I don't need anybody's help. And for me, you know, we're all individual in that way. But for me, that's the side that I needed help with. And some people need to be a little bit, more open to actually being less, like, regimented, right? So, being able to be coached is definitely, I'd say, something that not everybody is able to do right away. And it's taken me a little bit of time to find out how to really make it work and for me and my coach, with that. The other piece of it is, again, with the social media aspect and being able to kind of find your own way to do it and do you and stay on it and keep trying with that. And that's definitely a big piece in this time frame with it. So
cool. Hey, so you're ready for the hard question?
All right.
That's
pretty hard.
All right. No, here it is. This is the hard question because I talk with someone like you, and I know a lot of people like you. I've been around athletes my whole life. I've been an athlete my whole life. And, we all have certain quirks and things that stick out. But I'm going to ask you the hard question, and that is, how do you feel about rest?
Oh, rest? I hate rest.
We need to have a talk.
No. So it's actually really funny because the other day I Skyped Dylan, and I was like, you know what I'm actually looking forward to the most? Cause since I've been home, it's been a whirlwind since I was at Nationals and home. I put on a yard sale, all my stuff. It's been a whirlwind, and within all of that, I have to keep training, and it's been like, oh my God, after this phone call, I have to go do, I'm going training, and then I have to be, I actually have a TV interview on Channel 3.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, like 4 o'clock today, or so it's like, okay, get this, and like, get all this done, and my head's going 1,000 miles an hour, but I guess the other day, I was like, you know what I can't wait for? Is on Sunday, this Sunday, so when I fly back on Thursday, drive back to Fernie on Friday. Saturday is Rocky Mountain demo day, so we will be literally doing that from sunup to sundown, leading bike rides, talking to people, yada,
I know
yada.
That routine, yep.
I'm like, is it Sunday yet? Because I want to do nothing day. And
yes.
Like, what? Did you just say that? He's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, right? Because Dylan, it's great. We are a great team because we do have a lot of opposites of each other that blend very well to help us both grow to be better people and come into balance. And it's just not to get into too much of the relationship side of it, but it's so important for me to have him and have that because I need that to kind of like take the rest, enjoy the rest. And I'm learning, and over this last year, again, having Eric as a consistent coach every day of the year, to really enjoy and embrace, like, recovery days and really make it a recovery day. Rest day is
yay.
Not a travel day.
Okay, you're pulling out the right answer here. You're definitely doing that.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. I know the right answer. I'm just giving you what I really like.
I know.
But it's a
tricky question, because it's you've got that fine line between I'm on and I'm off, and off is so incredibly important. It's probably of all the people that I have worked with over the years, I think that the hardest thing I've had to explain to people is what it's like to have an easy day and what an easy day actually consists of and why you need it. And it makes such an incredible difference.
I love power lying about.
That's Fran. She's gonna.
Yeah.
Jenna, we just ate up a whole bunch of time, and you've opened some more questions. We're gonna have to do this again because I heard you start talking about relationship, and I'm thinking, wow, we could do a show just on being a professional athlete and having a relationship and how you deal with that. That could turn into a really cool show.
I can go into that pretty deeply because I'm kind of both ends of the spectrum, and now.
So there's more things we need to touch base on. So let's keep in contact on this and look at the possibility of doing this maybe for a future show because I can see some good stuff. But I'm running out of time. So unfortunately, it just lasts for an hour. So we just ate up a perfectly good hour. And it's been really, really good to have you on the air. You're very interesting to talk to and never short on words. Scott told me that.
Scott. Yeah, like I said, you need to put a cap on me because I'll just keep going.
No, it's okay.
I could tell you the whole story at some point of how Dylan ended up even just interacting with me because I was on a group ride with like 10 guys and I'm at the back just yapping away to this guy who's just like, he's like, She's just having a conversation with herself back there. Like, I gotta go talk to this girl. She's this poor thing. She's just yapping away and nobody's talking back to her.
See, we're gonna save this for the relationship show. I can see this coming.
Yeah. You and me in a bottle of wine, that would be entertaining.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah.
That would be. That'd be fun. Yeah. So the next time you're back and visiting, you need to connect and we'll personally connect. We'll have some fun. Okay.
Oh, I'd love to
save that easy day for that time too. So
yeah.
So I can actually keep up with you, okay?
Perfect.
All right. That sounds great. All right, my guest today has been Jenna Greaser, and she was originally from Barkhamsted, Connecticut, and now is up in British Columbia. So long way away, and she's here for a visit, and she is a professional mountain bike racer, recently winning the Fat Tire Fat Bike Nationals in Grand Rapids, Michigan on February 10th. It's been wonderful to have you here, Jenna. I'm going to move on to some other business, and I'm going to sign you off. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks again.
All right. So moving forward here, we are just going to finish up a few things here. I like to remind people of what's going on here. In our future, in our area, we've got, this is May is Bike Month, obviously. We've got a lot of things going on. We've got National Bike to Work Week going on right now. There is an event right in Hartford. There's also one in New Haven. There's events other places around the country, too, if you're listening from around the country. So participate in White Bike to Work Week. It's May 14th through the 18th, and Bike to Work Day is Friday, May 18th. So please check that out. We've got area rides coming up, and I'm really running out of time, so I can't get to them, but I will mention them again next week on podcasts. If you listen to any of my other podcasts and shows, you'll be able to see what's coming up to date on future rides in our area. Fran and I are off this Friday to work our way down to Virginia, where we will be involved with the Farm to Fork Fondos, the first of 8 events this year that my friend Tyler is putting on. And we're going to go hang out with the folks down there with Renegade Sports. And that should be a really, really nice time. So we'll be broadcasting there too. Well, I won't be broadcasting, but I am the MC. So if you're in the area and you happen to be anywhere near the Shenandoah Valley this weekend, that's where we'll be. My name is Peddlin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host Fran Storch.
Yeah.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs. Thanks for listening.